13th of October, 2004. Last time we completed the first chapter of Itizora, so we now continue with the beginning of the second chapter that we find on Daf Chof Beis. In other words, 22a at the bottom where the Mishnah is, and then of course we'll continue on the next side with the beginning of the Gemara. In order to get the background for this, we have to understand that the world of the Greeks and the Romans was not the most moral world. It was a very immoral world, okay? And when it came to sexual practices, they were not particularly faithful one to another. And so we're going to see that some of the things that the Torah rails against, when we read, for example, in Achrei Mos or in Kedoshim, where we have, things that are prohibited, relationships, not only, between prohibited relations between men and women, but also, prohibited relations between human beings and animals, okay? So that this is the first thing that's going to be discussed in this particular chapter. So we have an opportunity to see that Taket was a very, very immoral world, and therefore our sages were very much concerned even about how the Jews would react to such a world.
Is this Greek or Roman?
And the both, same Chaleria. Right.
Well, the Greeks came first, and then came the Romans. In terms of time, there was not existing. Were they coexisting?
The Greek civilization is older than Roman.
Right.
Yeah.
But
then the Romans, adopted Greek civilization as they simply acculturated.
They also conquered them, did they?
Right? Oh, of course, yeah. Absolutely. Right. I mean, because Rome actually was, it was the Roman Empire, see, and Greece was part of the Roman Empire.
Yeah, that's what I
originally they started with southern Italy, which had been colonized by the Greeks, and then after conquering southern Italy, then the next place that they went to was actually Greece itself, and they conquered that. Besides conquering other areas such as Carthage and North Africa, so that North Africa, for the most part, became colonized by the Romans as well. Of course, Spain was colonized by the Romans. You had original inhabitants, but they became colonized by the Romans. Gaul, which of course became France in later time, this is also was colonized by them. But the Germans, they didn't have that much success, but they had some success with the Germans. Okay, so the Mishnah begins by saying, "Ein ma'amidin behema b'fun nekoyes shel ovdei kechavim ifnei shechashudim al hor v'yom." Mishnah makes a blanket statement. Later on, we may see exceptions, but right now, this is the prevailing rule, namely, that a Jew should not stable his animal in an idolater's inn, because the idolaters are suspected of revia. What is revia? Revia, of course, is what we call nicely bestiality. In other words, relations between human beings and animals. Okay? And then it continues. Furthermore, a woman should not be secluded with them, because they are suspected of violating the laws against prohibited relations. So this is another thing.
But they should not be secluded
with
whom?
With idolaters.
With idolaters.
With idolaters, right. With Jews, it's already a different story, but we also have rules concerning Yichud. However, with the Goyim, since they were so steeped in immorality, that it's even more dangerous a situation. Okay? And then finally, v'lo yisachet odom imehem, nor should a man be secluded with the idolaters, b'pnei shechashudin ashrichas tomin, because they are suspected of trying to kill Jews. Imagine that. That's like being in an Arab area today, you know, for a Jew. That they look for any opportunity to kill Jews, unfortunately. And you read about Jews who have been lynched, murdered, I don't have to tell you, mutilated, God knows what else. Right. So that, therefore, a man should not associate with that type of a situation, because he is exposing himself to the possibility of being murdered. Okay? Tosfos has a problem, because it quotes the fact that we find a Gemara that Jews should not entrust their sheep, their cattle, to Goyim to watch over them, because they're afraid again that they would be practicing this kind of immoral behavior with them. But by the time of the Gemara, by the time of Tosfos, which is of course centuries later than the text of the Mishnah itself, then the Jews were doing it. So they seek to find reasons for permitting it
to
justify
it.
Right, and not to be concerned about this. Okay, so these are some of the things that we'll see as we go on. All right, so now we start on the next side of the page, where the Gemara itself begins. Okay.
Chapter 2.
We're now on Chof Beis, Omid Beis.
Omid Beis.
Right. We did the Mishnah already. So now we're going to start the Gemara. Pardon me. My throat seems to be on the horse side tonight. The Raminu. So, Raminu always means that. So, we ask a kasha about this, because we have a contradictory statement, okay? What is the contradictory statement? It says, Lakhinehem behemel a korban, the yed choshashim, lo mishum rovdei, avadashobaniyabra. Okay? We are permitted to buy an animal from the Goyim, right, in order to be used as a korban, in other words, to be used as a sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash, you understand? And at the same time, it says, Ve'ed Choshishin, and we're not worried, lo mishum roveya, neither about the fact that somebody may have had relations with the animal, or the lotion of nearby, or the fact that the animal may have been the victim, so to speak, of relations, right? Balomishum mukta, and we're not concerned either about whether the fact that the animal had been originally set aside by the goy in order to use it as a sacrifice for his avodah zarah. Actually, he hasn't used it yet, you see. So, time being, even though he set it aside, but nevertheless, it hasn't gone ahead with it, and so we're not concerned about that. The Nevad, nor are we concerned about the fact that the animal actually may have been used as an idol, an object of idol worship, because as we know, very often, for example, in particularly in the Egyptian civilization, we're aware of the fact that they worshipped all kinds of animals over there. Of course, to a certain extent, the Hindus do also today, even to this very day. I mean, that cows are sacred among them. Elephants are sacred, you know. So, it happens, right? So, why? So the Gemara says, in Isa da Aktiye, in Isa da Falche, they have a Mosbin lay. Says, first of all, if the guy had really set aside the animal intending to use it as a korban, right, to his Avodah Zarah, or if actually he worshipped the animal as an Avodah Zarah, then in that particular case,
he would never have sold it to the Jew, because he would want to keep it, you know, for his own idolatrous purposes. Now they're all there, the near Baba, but it comes to the question as to whether the animal had been used in order to, you know, for immoral sexual behavior with a human being. Lochush, shouldn't we be concerned about it? So Marav Tachlifa, so Marav Tachlifa came along and he said, Omer Rav Shila Bar Abina, he said, Rav Shila, the son of Abina, said, Mishmei the Rav, in the name of Rav, he says, Oive kechovim chos al behemto, shalote yokeh. It says that the idolater is concerned about the welfare of his animal, that it should not become barren, lote yokeh. And in other words, the feeling was prevalent in those days that if the animal had been used immorally, then in that case, the animal would not bear, you know, any offspring, you understand? So that therefore, since the idolater wants his flock to increase, so therefore he's not going to use the animal in this particular way. This is, of course, as I said, the explanation given by Rav Tachlifa, you know, going back to Rav. Okay. So the Gemara still questions this business. It says, Hasinach the Kavas. All right, God's fine. Let's say this is true as far as female animals are concerned. Why? Because the female animals are going to be unable, you know, to produce offspring. So, okay. So in that case, we can consider that the Goy is very much concerned about it, and he's not going to use the animal for immoral purposes. But Zechorim Ma'ikol Enema, what if it happens to be a male animal? So Marav Kahana, so Rav Kahana came along and he says, Ho'il Ma'afichishin the Bosa. Says, no, we don't even have to worry about the male animal, because if it is used immorally, then in that particular case, it's going to lose weight, it's going to become skinny, and, you know, it won't be as valuable as before. So that, therefore, the goy will be more careful concerning the welfare of his animal. Well, that's the point of view, okay? Elo Odetanya, however, how about the fact that we learned another teaching, which says, Lokshkin Behemu Meroeshalahen, that we are permitted to buy an animal from a goyish shepherd, Lichush Dilmaravio, shouldn't we be concerned, thus, you know, the shepherd that decided to have immoral sex with the animal. So we say, Roya Shalahed Misyorib Mishun Hefsetzoha. They says, well, their shepherd wouldn't do such a thing. Why? Because he's afraid that he's going to lose the value of the animal. Because the word spreads, you know, that this animal has been used in this particular way. So obviously, it's not going to be as valuable as it was, and so therefore, we would love to suspect that a shepherd would do this kind of business. Okay? Elo Oder Tanya, however. All right, so now we come back to another Gemara. Not only here, but in another area, which says, Ein Mosrim Behemo L'Roa Shelahen, right? We do not... we do not hand over. Here it's not, you know, we do not buy, but it says we don't hand over to put in their charge, right? An animal to one of their herdsmen, right? We shouldn't, in other words, engage a goyish herdsman for our animals. So lema rosh on the head, monsieur, misham have said the foray, right? So why don't we apply the same thing that we said a moment ago, where we say that their shepherd is going to be concerned, he's going to be afraid that he's going to lose the pay that he was supposed to get for taking care of the animal. So what is the answer over there? Why then should we not give it to them? So it says, Idhu di yadei bahadodei mirtasei. An interesting comment. It says, the goyim, they know, they're aware of the practices of their shepherds, right? They know what they do. So in that case, the shepherd will be afraid to do something to the animal because his fellow goyim, won't buy the animal, or they won't trust him with the animal, right? However, what about a Jew? Right? Not we, the lawyer didn't, the who? Lo mirtasa. Says, we who don't know about these kind of practices, I mean, we never do it, and we're not aware, I mean, that the world is going and doing these kind of things, he wouldn't be afraid of deceiving us in this particular way. And that's why, what? That's why we should hand over to a shepherd, one of our animals to take care of, because we don't know whether he'll take good care of it or not. Okay? So, Omar Rabba. So Rabba said, Haidin Amar Yinshay. This is like a popular statement that people make, where they say, Dichtabab, Gelolo Bozav, Ragla Bechavre Yodav. Okay? Which means that the Dichtabab, or the Machtev, I guess it will be read as Machtev, which means this is the thing that you use to write upon a stone, a stylus, okay? A stylus, it says, knows how to split the rock, okay? Knows how to scratch out, in other words, in order to learn. So just as the stylus knows how these things, so, Ragla Bechavra Yoda. So, likewise, we know that the people, who are wicked, they know each other. Mm-hmm. Right. One wicked person knows another. Okay? That's what they say. So far we don't know. We're sort of shuckling one way and shuckling the other way, right? So it says, Hochi, if this is the case, it says, Zechorim in a kevos ledizman. Okay. We should not sell male animals that come from females. It's a little bit mixed up. But we're talking about for a korban, as Rashi puts up. Right? Why? Because we're afraid, that maybe the animal has been. Whereas, what did we say further up? We said that we're not afraid, right? Right. So as we see, there are contradictory opinions that they have over here in the Gemara. One holds that it's okay to sell it even for a korban, right? And now they're questioning whether it is. I mean, because the possibility is, that the animal has been used. Now, the zechorim over here means male animals for a sacrifice, right? From the kevos that might have been violated, right? We shouldn't buy them. The chayashinon, because we were concerned that maybe, they have been used immorally. So Kevan the Migre Bo Mirtasa. So we say, well, it's a funny thing, they say, but if an animal is used for sexual purposes, it likes to follow along, it likes to drag along to the person who did it. Okay? So, in other words, people would be afraid if they see the animal so closely attached that they would suspect that the animal had been abused. Okay? Elohad is a dear Rav Yosef. But how about another teaching that we learned, where Rav Yosef taught as follows? He said, "Our malto the Sarve Kalba says a widow should not raise a dog. Right? In other words, for this particular reason, that,
Bestiality,
exactly. Right. The Lord Tashi Babi Rav Yushpiza. And furthermore, she shouldn't even host a Talmid Chacham even, Babi Rav, in her dwelling place. Why? Because we're afraid, that maybe they'll practice a little monkey business together or something like that. So he says, Bishnabon Babi Rav, okay, in the case of a Talmud Chacham, if he should be alone with a woman, then Sneola, then in that particular case, she could keep it secret. In other words, people wouldn't know whether it had happened or it hadn't happened. Okay? Ela Kalba, but in the case of the dog, even the Migrabo, Mithasol, right? Shouldn't she be afraid if the dog likes to stay close to her and follow her around all the time? Literally be dragged with her. That's what Migra means, right? To drag with her. So, no, maybe she could get away with it by a different way. Kevan dechishad yaleh unso, v'masra ha-basra. Look, if she would throw him a piece of meat, right? And he would stay close to her because he wants to eat the meat. So Neymar Amrei Inshe, and she might say, people will be saying, "Hi, the Basra Chabasra." The only reason why the dog stays so close to her is Mishamumtza. Because I Basra Chabasra. Because, the piece of the meat, And that's the reason why he stays so close to her. All right, now how about Kobasrak de Kavos, Hazel de Kavos, and how about, females with females? My Tabalim Stock, the Lobby Akhtinim, for what reason don't we permit them to be in seclusion with each other? So Omar Maruch Bo Bachomah, so Maruch Bo Bachomah said, if they show the Kechovim in Suyde to the Sheikh Abrahim, he says, because first of all, the idolaters, he says, they like always to play around with somebody else's wives. Okay? Well, for Amim, and sometimes Shayna Mertzah, when he doesn't find the woman that he's seeking, the Mertzah is Habahema, and he finds a certain animal, so we're over. So you know what? So he has intercourse with the animal. Doesn't speak very highly of the morality of the goyim in those days. But the Gemara is talking. You say it's prejudice, but on the other hand, they were living in that world. We're not in that kind of a world today. So theoretically, although God knows what goes on. We're aware. That there are such things. People are living with each other without benefit of marriage. We're aware of the fact that all of a sudden homosexuality is considered very good. Of course, this was characteristic of the ancient world, right? And we're also aware of the fact that bestiality is not something that is passé, that it still exists in certain areas, certain civilizations. So that being the case, that they were being very realistic about the kind of a world that they were living in. Okay. The Ebois Emo, not only that, he said, these goyim are such that Afila Motsa, even if he finds the woman that he wants to have relations with, right? The Namirova, nevertheless, he still looks also for an animal in order to have relations with. The Omar Mar, as a certain scholar said, Chadiva lehem behem tam shem Yisrael, Yosef b'nishay sehem, that The animal that belongs to a Jew is even more beloved by these idolaters than their own wives. No, I won't make any further comment on that.
Those kinds of comments, I think, can be a prejudicial kind of thinking.
Yeah.
You know, they're going beyond what they see into imagining what they might or might not represent.
Okay. I understand what you're saying, I mean. But nevertheless, there are other sources to indicate, I mean, that, that the kind of world that is depicted over here is not impossible, right?
Within the realm of probability.
Correct. You have, I mean, even in Roman civilization, I mean, the Satyricon, for example, speaks about all kinds of things that the Romans were doing in those days. Along the lines of everything that we're learning over here.
Times, you have that now, too. So among sheep herders and cattle herders and cattle people and so forth.
Yeah.
The Caucasus area. Armenians, Azerbaijanians, and they... was like jokes among the school students in the continental Russia.
Uh-huh.
Their practices.
Yeah.
Well, the jokes always exist, they do now, about the hillbillies too, don't they? And
yeah,
rednecks,
sure,
you know,
right, of course. And, you know, supposedly, I mean, I've only read about it, I've never been over there, but supposedly American tourists run to Tijuana in Mexico, where they put on all kinds of shows involving animals and women and things like that and so on. You know.
I don't know. You have a report from there, Phil?
No, but I've read.
I was never there,
so I don't know. But I did read something to that effect, right?
It's an awful place.
Yeah. Well, today people run there in order to get all kinds of medications that the you can't get in the States, you know.
Right.
Not approved.
The last place I would go.
Yeah.
In fact, I can tell you that it's kind of byproduct of my specialty, but when we review the search engines on the performance, there are a lot of adult search engines, and bestiality is part of the high rated traffic.
On the internet,
what is it?
There's a lot of pornography, I guess, right?
I guess it's one subsection in this. Even within the category, they assign different rating for advertisements and for traffic and all of this.
Okay, so as we see, this may have been written 2,000 years ago, but it still has a certain contemporary.
Goyim, that's all.
Right. I'll advise that the Jews don't do these things.
No,
unfortunately. I mean, Jews who grow up without any religious feeling or anything like that, unfortunately, you know, very often is swept into the jungle
morality,
All right, so now the next statement that we have is an explanation by Rabbi Yochanan about how did it ever happen that human beings should be guilty of such a thing. So he says, Rabbi Yochanan said as follows. He says, "B'sho'a she'bo docho shal chavo, hitu bo zuhamo."
Well, that's what we've been asking here, the same question.
Right. It says, when the snake, the serpent, had relations with Eve. In other words, there was an agada to the fact that the serpent, you know, seduced Eve, and not just by telling her, you know, to try the fruit, right, but actually seduced her. So at that particular point, they injected in her zuhama. Zuhama means literally filth. In other words, this filth then is the filthiness that exists in the human character, so to speak.
Comes from Eve.
Huh?
Comes from Eve.
from Eve. This is what Rabbi Yochanan said. Look, take it for what it's worth.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
But he was trying to explain how is it, you know, that human beings developed, you know, these filthy things. And so he says, this is already, it was the Nachash who injected human beings with this, okay? And of course, the Nachash, I don't have to tell you, it represents anything that is evil, right? It's the Yetzer Hara, it's Satan, and so on. I mean, all these things are identified with the Nachash, okay?
Yeah. Am I correct in remembering that you're calling that the snake, right?
Right, right.
The snake. Well, the snake actually was condemned to crawl,
right,
after
correct.
The
event. Yeah, that's
right?
Correct.
But he was still an evil thing even
he was an evil thing even before, because he was the one who seduced first Eve and then Adam. So, right, right. So that's the feeling, you know. As I said, they identified with anything that is evil. Okay. So they say, Yehochi Yisrael Dami. So the same filth that went into human beings also went into Israel too, into Jewish people. No. So they say, no. Yisrael she'omnu al har Sinai, when the Jews stood at the foot of Mount Sinai and they got the Ten Commandments and so on, then in that case, pasko zu habosam, then the filth ceased among Jews. However, Ovdei kechavim, when it comes to the idolaters, shalei abdu al har Sinai, they didn't stand on Mount Sinai. Remember what we had at the very beginning in the first chapter over there about how you know that came claiming that, you know, why didn't you give us the Torah, etc., etc., right? And then they rejected even the mitzvah of sukkah, if you remember. They kicked the sukkah down, if you recall. So in that particular case, the goyim still retain this filth in their nature. Okay. Look, I mean, we're aware there's some very, very wonderful goyim, highly moral, and we don't want to paint with a paintbrush, you know, everybody all the same color. Okay, we understand that. But nevertheless, for a person like Rabbi Yochanan, who lived among the Romans, he could see, you know, what was the type of the civilization that they had. I mean, we think that, you know, the civilization of the average Roman, let's say, it's like the literary giants of the Latin literature and things like that. But the average person was not like that. So there was still, the average person lived along the lines of the same. And as I mentioned, the Satyricon, or the Golden Ass, that's another thing which also depicted Roman life the way it was. So there you have a more down-to-earth picture, you know, of what the average person was like.
Well,
okay.
Even the literary
it's all right. I would say Ovid, but it doesn't matter.
Also spoke of immorality to a great mode of immorality.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well,
he was the one who wrote The Art of Love, you know, his poetry. It's The Art of Love.
Exactly.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was customary for emperors to travel with two little boys, right? So it was a reference to that.
In many cases, I mean, they definitely practiced homosexuality. There's no question about it. Yeah. All right. Okay. We continue in the same idea, right? Another question that was raised is Oifes Mai. Alright, we were talking about animals, sheep, right? How about birds? Are they okay?
So he's saying, Tosh Ma, hey, listen, I got a story for you about that, too. The Omer Rav Yehuda, Omer Shmuel. Rav Yehuda said the name of Shmuel, Mishum Rabbi Chanina, in the name of Rabbi Chanina, he says, Adi Ra'isi Oved Kechavim, I saw an idolater, Shelokach Avoz Ben Hashuk, he bought a goose in the market, Rivo'ov, he used it sexually, Chanaka, then he strangled it, Slo'ov, and then he roasted it, Ba'afala, and he ate it. I guess he had Hanoa, as we would say.
Phil, you got a sense
of humor. What can I say?
Right.
The Omer Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Difti, Rabbi Yirmiyahu came from Difti, said, Ani ro'isi Arbi echad. I saw an Arab, he says. Shalokach yorech min ashuk. He bought, the thigh section of meat in the market. Bechokach bo kidei revio. And he made a hole in it, big enough in order that he should be able to use it for sexual purposes. Rivo'o, and he did. It's a law, and then he roasted it. Va'chola, and he ate it. So we have first-hand testimony to something like this. Right. Okay. The time is enough. Right. Yes. They had lots of Arabs in those days. Yeah.
And the Arabs were not a separate category? They were still idolaters?
Of course they were idolaters.
They weren't Muslims?
Right. They weren't Muslims, no.
They
weren't Muslims?
No, they weren't Muslims. No.
What prevents Muslims from practicing the same thing?
Because they're not saying that he doesn't, but this is filled with the Zara.
Okay. Right. It certainly is. No question. It's posnished, these things that they're learning, but they're being very realistic, right? Yeah, we could continue, but I'll tell you, I think it's already after 8:30. Why don't we call a halt tonight so that you can get home, make yourselves comfortable, and we'll listen to the... So tonight is the 20th, I think?
Yeah.
20th of October in the year 2004, and we continue now with Gemara Vedazora, Daf Chof Gimel Amid Aleph, 23a. Ravina Amar Lekasha. Ravina says that it's not a kasha. The question is, what is he talking about? Okay. So for that, we need Rashi. It says, Mahadi le Terutse Mastisa, Umbaraisa de la Il. Says to the Mishnah and the Baraisa that we were quoting before, it says Lo'ilam Chashide Basdis El Chatzil Katonin Dein Ma'amid Mishum Dilma Rovalo. All right, the Baraisa the Katonin Chashish Mishum Boyfaya Mishum Nirba. Okay, he says that we quote it, the Mishnah itself. I don't know if you recall. It begins by saying, Ein Ma'amid. In other words, it prohibits stabling animals in an idolatrous inn because of the fact that they were suspected of, indulging in bestiality, okay? And then along came a baraisa that we studied, and the question is, whether... It says over there, Lahoda Tanya, that's on the previous page over there, on the previous side. It says, Hoda Tanya, Lokhim Behema Marushal. So, in other words, which seems to indicate that it is permissible to buy an animal from them. So the question is, there's a contradiction. If you're afraid, that the animal has been used for a purpose, then why is it that you're permitted to buy from them? And not only that, but question is, can you use the animal that you bought for a sacrifice? Where, of course, the element of Kedusha enters into it. So, the
the terence that we give over here at the moment is holachat chila for the Eved. This is what Rabina says. In other words, there's a difference between, to begin with, what you should not be doing, but the Eved means, and if you did it, then in that particular case, you can get away with it. So in other words, to begin with, don't put an animal over there in such a situation, you know, where it's liable to be used. But the Eved, if you bought an animal and you're sure, you know, that nothing was done with it, then in that case it would be permissible to do it. So this is the distinction that makes it. So Morris says, Menor Tabor, and how do you say the Shani Ben Chatchil Ben Yevid? You know that there is such a thing as a difference between the Chatchila and the Yevid. These terms I'm keeping in Hebrew, but you know what they mean. Chatchila means to begin with, you don't do this. Okay? But the Yevid, if you did it, then, you know, you don't have to undo it or something like that. Okay? So, how do we know that there is such a thing? So he says that none. We learn further in the Mishnah, where it says, Lotus Yached Ishoim Lahem Ibnish Chashud El Harayas. A woman should not also be left alone among idolaters because they are suspected of, you know, indulging in immoral sexuality, right? So, and Ether Aminu still has the kasha on that because we have a different teaching which says, Ha'isho Shadech Bisho Bidei Oide Kechovim. If a woman was put into prison by idolaters, why was she put into prison? Well, depends for what. So he says, Al Yidei Momoin Muteres V'Bala. If it was for a monetary reason, in other words, that she had a debt which she couldn't pay, and as a result, the goy came along and he held her and put her into debtor's prison. So, in that particular case, when she is freed from prison, then in that particular case, she would be permitted again to her husband. Okay? Problem over here is, first of all, I mean, obviously, that, you know, the husband wants to make sure that she is not damaged goods. That's number one. Number two, if he's a Kohen, he has to be even more careful, because we say that under certain circumstances, if a woman is a prisoner, then the Kohen can no longer live with her, because it's suspected, you know, that she has had, even against her will, possibly, you know, she was raped or something like that. But as a Kohen, you know, he has to maintain a certain level of holiness that beyond, you know, what the average Jew has to do.
Excuse me. Is it a little bit far-fetched that this would even happen if a Kohen's wife were in danger of being prison, for example?
Yeah.
Certainly, he would see to it whatever it is, and the debt would be paid, and whatever.
Okay. Well, this is the difference that he's making.
I'm sorry?
I say this is precisely the point that he's making right now. Okay. He says, you know, if she was taken prison, so it's Anyadei Momon, she is Muteres Lebala, right? She would be permitted to her husband afterwards, right? Why? Because the presumption is that the idolater wants to collect his money, and therefore he's not going to harm the woman. Otherwise, you know, the husband wouldn't want to pay or something like that. So, because of that, so therefore we can rely upon the fact that you know, that nothing happened to her. However, it's Agadei Nefoshes. Let's say that she was seized on a charge of having committed murder or something like that, where the punishment would be death. And in that particular case, then she's Asur Levada. Then, in that particular case, she would be prohibited to her husband. Now, of course, the presumption over here would be that eventually she was freed from prison. But why should she be prohibited to her husband? The answer, of course, again, we're talking primarily about a coin, okay? Because the jailer, knowing that she's condemned to death, he wouldn't hesitate, you know, to rape her. That's the reason why. not losing anything by it, for the sin. Okay? So
they don't take the evidence of the wife's word at all.
No, she's permitted to, because we say that when it comes to laws, excuse me, of Issur and Heter, you know, what is prohibited, what is permissible, and in that particular case, testimony of a woman can be taken, testimony of a woman, even by herself, can be taken, as for example, the question. She testifies, you know, that her husband died. Of course, we still need, you know, witnesses to that fact or something, but, you know, so that she could be free to remarry, or that she was divorced. So I'm not sure, we'd have to have evidence, I mean, to that effect, you know. But the woman's testimony would still be considered, and of course, it was, if it would be accepted. Of course, I mean, the same thing would apply. I mean, let's say a question about whether something milking fell into a fleshing pot or vice versa, something like that. A woman's testimony is considered just as acceptable as a man's testimony in that case. So that's why that's called Issur v'Heter, you know, things that are prohibited and things that are permissible. So in that category, yes. Okay. So, all right, I did one minute. So, from this, we can derive the conclusion what? That there is a difference between the chatchila to begin with and the yevet. What, you know, if this happened, then, you know, how can we interpret it? Okay? So it says, Shalimon ben chatchila v'yevet. So we see then that this is a principle that Ravina is stating, that we do make a difference between what you do beforehand as compared to what is permissible afterwards, after the effect. Okay. So they say, Mamai, on what basis do you derive this kind of a teaching? Maybe I could argue the point that even if it is d'yevet, still it is prohibited. And in the case of the woman who was taken a prisoner, right, then why do we say then that, you know, she is permitted back to her husband again, if it was, as we said, Ayilei Mamon, right? He says, "Tama the misyori mishum hefsi b'moyne," right? Because the reason is that the goy is afraid that he's going to lose the money that they owe. Okay, so Gemara continues and says, "Teina, no, therefore the ketoni sefer." So let's continue with the analysis of the Mishnah or the Baraisa. Baraisa says, "Adyadei nefoshes asir levala," right? And if it were, you know, for if she's there on a charge that involves capital punishment, then in that particular case she would be prohibited because of the assumption that we made. Sulo Mide and nothing else. So Rabbi Pados Omar Lakasha. Rabbi Pados says, no, it's not a kasha. Or Rabbi Eliezer, or Rabbanan, where we find the point of view that says, no, you cannot to begin with. So that's Rabbi Eliezer. Matter of fact, according to Rabbi Eliezer, according to this opinion, Rabbi Eliezer says, never under any circumstance can you do it. Okay. But the liberal point of view represents what? For Rabbanim. It's the rabbis, you know, in general, you know, they are more liberal in this respect. Ditnam Gabe Poras Chatas. We can learn this in a Mishnah which deals with the cow, you know, the Porah Duma, which is used as literally a sin offering. It isn't really a sin offering in every respect. The sin offering is for a sin specifically. I violated Shabbos. did something I should not have done, right? So in that particular case, I bring as my atonement a chatas, a sin offering. Okay? The parah aduma, on the other hand, has a different function. What is the function of the parah aduma? They burn it, right?
Ashes,
right? Right, and then with the ashes, you know, they have to take the hyssop and rice, living water, and so on, right? And then it's used to sprinkle.
And it makes it pure.
And makes you pure so that you can go into the base of Mikvah. So, okay? So, in other words, it's not functioning the same. Yet the Torah itself refers to it also with the word chatos. So that, therefore, if it uses this terminology, then there has to be a reason why the Torah refers to it that way, and we'll see that it's a chatos in the sense, first of all, where do they have to slaughter it, you know, before the sacrifice. Secondly, it's a chatos in the sense that you know, it's considered holy, even if it's not exactly the same category, but nevertheless it still has a certain amount of association with holiness involved in it. Okay. So, he says that long gabi poras chatos, we learned a Mishnah concerning the paraduma, where there is a difference of opinion, again, between who? Between Rabbi Eliezer and the rabbis, right? Rabbi Eliezer or Rabban, alright? Yeah, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Eino Nikachas Benoiv Nikachavet. Rabbi Eliezer says you cannot purchase the Parah Aduma from an idolater, okay? B'chachavim Matirin. But the rabbis, the sages, they permit, you know, that it is a goy, had a Parah Aduma, you're permitted to buy it from him. Okay? So, my love, why can't we argue as follows? That the Hor Kamefligay, that the difference of opinion between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim is in this particular area. The Rabbi Eliezer, so far, is of the opinion, Chai Shinon Nervia, that, you know, we're worried that the goy may have committed an immoral act with the parah, right? Verabonin savre, and the rabbis of the opinion, lo chayishin levia, we are not concerned, you know, we don't suspect that the animal was used in that particular way. So they say, mimai, then how do I know, you know? Dilma, maybe it is the Chuli Alma Leichayishin Levia. Maybe both Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim are not concerned about the possibility of the animal having been used immorally. But rather there's a different reason. The reason is for the Rabbi Eliezer is Kidrav Yehuda. The opinion of Rabbi Eliezer is similar to that of Rabbi Yehuda. Omar Rav, who said in the name of Rav. What did he say? He said, Omar, Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Rav. Rabbi Yehuda said the name of Rav. He said, He niyach alehen udo shel sakin pesola. He says, if the idolater had placed several bags upon them, upon the animal, okay, then he made it ineligible to be a Parah Aduma. Why? Because the Torah itself says, you know, that you cannot put a, you know, object upon it. Okay. So, in that particular case, maybe that's the reason why, because Rabbi Eliezer would be simply of the same opinion, namely that the goy, not realizing what he was doing, what did he do? So he replaced another. Of course, that immediately made the animal ineligible, possible, as we would say. Okay? Well, the egg law, and here we go into the business of the egg law rufa. Remember, this is the heifer that has to be slain in order to atone for a murder that had been committed, and we don't know who the murderer was, right? And there are all kinds of rules that we learned when we studied the Gemara Sota about the Yegla Rufa. So there, what is its qualification in the animal? It would be Acha Tim Sheikhba, if the animal actually had moved carrying something on it. In other words, the Pora Duma, just placing it on, because it's written lo lo leho all. In other words, no yoke has ever been placed upon it. So just putting something on it could disqualify it, okay?
If it doesn't move right. With it. You have the second one. If it doesn't move, you can something would be put on if they can't move with it.
Right, right.
But he's not being, he's not working.
Working.
Right.
Why would somebody put something on an animal unless they wanted that animal to do work with
it? He was tired. He was carrying several bags on his back. Right. And he got tired, and so he put it on the animal in order to rest up. Okay. Take it. It's a possibility. Okay. Right. No. Whereas with the Egla Rufo, there it has to move. Shele Moshcha be all over there, it says. You see, one that Shele Oleho, Olo Oleho, all. One case, right, that no yoke has ever literally gone on top of it. And the other one says it has never pulled a yoke. So that, therefore, maybe his reasoning is that the niach alehen udo shel sakin, if he put, you know, a group of bags on it, basala, he made it possible, of the egla shel timshakla. So mar sovar, so in other words, one authority, meaning in this particular case, Rabbi Eliezer, it says chayshin, and we should be concerned about it. And mar sovar, and on the other hand, the rabbonin, they would say, lo chayshin, we're not concerned with it. Maybe we should argue that. So he says, Loi Sokol Datech. No. We shouldn't even think along those lines. Why? Because Mishum Nicho Purto Le Mavsid Tuva. Because in order to rest up for a moment by putting the sacks upon the red cow, he's not going to do it because Le Mavsi Tuvi doesn't want to lose all that money. I mean, he knows
if it's detected in some mark or something that would indicate that a load is placed
right.
On the animal.
Yeah, and in general, he knows that this is a very profitable thing, the red cow, because of its rarity. Very hard to find a cow that's 100% red without even one white hair or something in it. Every once in a while you have stories coming out of Israel that they have one. Right.
Read about farmers in Tennessee or Texas or whatever, and they'll have a Hasid come from Yerushalayim and spend like a month because everyone becomes very excited.
Right, right.
And inevitably, they always find like two black hairs.
Right,
or
something.
They come very,
wrong.
Very
right.
Close. But,
right.
What would they do with the redhead today?
What they would do then would be to reinstitute the idea. They would burn it and use the ashes, and they said, even the Torah says, and start in to purify because we are all in a state of impurity. Understand? So that's what they would be doing.
Now let me ask you this.
Yeah.
I'm going to waste really a lot of time. I know that there's a movement in Israel. I'm not sure I'm getting this right. Something like the faithful, the temple.
Yeah, Namoni Abayit. Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Right.
And
They actually have research and prepared kaleem. Now, would you use the ashes in the pur adama to in a sense cleanse or purify these kaleem as a preparation for the Beit HaMikdash? Would that be the next thing they would do?
Well, the question is, with the kaleem, it could be that it doesn't require it. Why does it require it? Because originally the kaleem had to be smeared with what we call the Shemen HaMishra, okay? Special combination of olive oil and other ingredients, you know, that were used by Moshe Rabbeinu in order to dedicate the kaleem for the you know, for the Mishkan. Subsequently, whenever they had to have new kaleem, then it wasn't necessary to smear that because the Shemen HaMishra was used up, it no longer existed. So instead, what makes them fit? The answer is that Hashmisha. In other words, when they're put into use, this sanctifies them.
Oh,
okay?
All right.
Yeah.
This would be for
this would be the
individuals.
No, right. In other words, the ashes, the Bor Aduma, that would be for individuals, exactly. And then, of course, I mean,
if
we should ever have a Beis HaMikdash, there'll be more things that are involved. Yeah. But this is as a preparation.
Can you do this without a Beis HaMikdash?
It can be done without the Beis HaMikdash. Right.
How many people could be purified from one red head? Kessel?
Well, it depends, I guess, how much water you mix with it.
Well, you'd have to get a line established.
Right.
Animals, you don't want to kill the one that you got. You have to.
I think you're right, Beverly.
You have to breed, you know, you'd have to get one and then breed so that you'd have a supply, so to speak.
Well, how could you even breed it? There's only one, you know. How
well, you try to get another one that's close and hope that the offspring are genetically whatever.
Yeah, right. Okay.
No, I think you're absolutely the right idea.
Put it under the genetic sequencing to find out what are the dominant traits and to match it with the right one.
Yeah.
Did they ever really have flocks? They didn't have flocks of redheads, so they were always rare, were they not?
They were always rare, absolutely.
But they didn't use it a lot. They had the one heifer.
Right, that lasted for a long time. Right. I guess, you know, they used it to sprinkle. They didn't use the pour. They used it to sprinkle. That way they could conserve it as much as they possibly could. last week, Greg came in. He was all excited about, he read that they're going to reestablish the Sanhedrin.
Right.
I tried to find it, and I'm sure I never found anything.
You
claimed
that email, David?
Well, you know, okay, this is, you know, Beinenu Be'atzmenu, between us, okay, I get from, if I remember, our roots,
Amr
not
Sheva,
a rock,
right.
our roots, Sheva,
right.
Where I get, I would say every day, 5 or 6 emails from Greg, and I don't read them all, so this particular thing didn't catch my eye. You know, something really, you know, he has, some of them are very interesting, but it would take, you would have nothing else to do with them, if you read everything yourself. I didn't see. The answer is no, I didn't see it.
You can go to the Arut Sheva website and look back.
I looked, but I couldn't find anything about it. Right.
He'd be very upset. He heard
I'm certainly very much interested, you know, to find out, I mean, whether it was actually an attempt made to reestablish this.
How it could even be established, who has the authority today, and all of that.
He had it all worked out. He was telling
shortly after the war, I don't remember now whether it was after 67 or after the war of 48. I think it was after 67. There was talk at that time, I think, of Rav Gorin, who was the chief rabbi at the time. He wanted to reintroduce him again. But, you know, the big problem that you always have is I'm a great Talmud Chacham, and who are you to tell me? I have to come to you. You have to come to me. It's unfortunate. I mean, that.
I asked Greg. I said, "Who's going to be the, you know, the, in a sense, the Rosh? I mean, Yoshev Rosh, the he named someone, but how they determined that this particular, I don't remember who it was.
There's so many factions even now.
Yeah,
you know,
of course,
so many factions I can't even imagine.
And there are great Talmidei Chachamim in Eretz Israel, just as they have great Talmidei Chachamim in America too. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but
I can't imagine that there could be a consensus.
Yeah. Well, they can get together on certain things, but I don't think for a Sanhedrin they can get together.
I mean, as a Sanhedrin,
right.
No, obviously. No.
Oh, well.
I'll put your name in, Doctor.
I wouldn't qualify. Okay. All right, so anyway, in the case of the Korah, I didn't say, look, he's not going to lose all the money that he could make simply because, you know, he was tired and he decided to... Okay. But how about the Egla Rufa? This is the next question, right? So in the case of the Egla Rufa, why don't we say the same thing? Yeah. Namely, so for the sake of making a few bucks, is he going to lose a great deal? So he says, well, Hassam Yisro Tokva. Sometimes they have a guy who has such a terrible Yisro, right, that he sees the animal and immediately he doesn't even think what he's doing, okay? So then they say, the Dilma Tukhuli Almele Chashin Nukiyo. So now there's another possibility. Maybe nobody is really suspecting, you know, that the animal will be used immorally, but the Hochainu Tama. But maybe there's a different reason why there is this difference opinion between Rabbi Eliezer, right, and the Chachamim. The Rabbi Eliezer, the Ketani, not the Ketani, Shiloh. Maybe the answer is that Rabbi Eliezer is of the same opinion that a certain scholar by the name of Shiloh said, the Tony who taught that, the Tony Shiloh taught that by Talmud Rabbi Eliezer. What is the reason of Rabbi Eliezer? He says, the reason why he says he cannot buy a Korah Duma from a non-Jew, remember this is the last thing that we're discussing, why can't we buy it? He says, because it's written, Dabe Obede Yisrael, speak to the children of Israel, the Yikhu Elecho, but not Yisrael. And literally, of course, we would translate, you know, and let the people of Israel, you know, acquire for you, right? So, the way he interprets it, he says, Yisrael, Yikhu, the Enoi, they can call them Yikhu. In other words, you can buy it, therefore, from whom? From Israel, from a Jew. But you cannot buy it from a non-Jew.
Or you could buy it, since we don't consider Christians to be idolaters, we could possibly buy it from these people in Texas or something.
Right, but again, remember, this is an opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. It's not the accepted one, because the Chachamim did not accept this point of view. And we'll see some famous story about the purchase from an idolater. That'll get a little bit later on. We'll have Amir Sasha maybe next week, I hope. Okay. So, Yichu, they will say, sorry. Yisrael Yichu, right? But the Yenoi, they can hold Yichu. All right. So he says, no, Sakufate. Wait a minute. No. Don't think that way either. Why? Because Tony Sefa. Didn't we learn a little further on in the statement that was analyzing that says, "V'chaydo Rabbi Eliezer posel b'chol hakorbanos kulon," and likewise, Rabbi Eliezer said that you cannot buy any sacrifice, that is any sacrificial animal from goyim, right? Not idolaters. The Yi Salkadatek in Tony Shiloh, then if your opinion is along the lines of what Shiloh taught, so he says, Vishnu Bapora Ksivva Pi Kicha. Yeah. in the case of the Paraduma, talking the word kicha, in other words, acquiring, purchasing, right, does occur in the text. But elakuhu kabones kicha ksibuhu. But tell me, in all and every single korban, does the word say, you know, kach, 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 right? In other words, no, it doesn't say that. So it says, v'dilma, maybe it says, ad kan lo pliga rabbanan alei rabbi Yehoshua. Maybe chacham rabban not in disagreement with Rabbi Eliezer. This page, next slide. Well, that tonight is the 27th already of the month of October, the year 2004, and we are gathered to continue from where we left off last week. And we're starting right now at the top of Avodah Zorah, Chav Gimel, Amid Beis, 23b in Avodah Zorah. Okay. I want to summarize very, very briefly what the argument is on the preceding side at this moment. There's a question, there's a difference of point of view between the Chachomim and between Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that you cannot buy an animal from a non-Jew to be used as a sacrifice in any way. Okay? The Chachamim say you can. Now, essentially we'll see why they say that. Okay? Why does Rabbi Eliezer say that you should only buy for something that has to do with the temple, the Beis HaMikdash, you have to buy only from a Jew? So, the answer, of course, is that he bases it upon a biblical verse, but also, in general, as we'll see, there's still the fear that was raised previously. The biblical verse that he cites says, you know, that they are to take unto me, the Yichu Li, as for example, Yichu Li Trumot. Rabbi Shalom says, take unto me, and he says, but Yichu, Yichu B'nei Yisrael, Yichu B'nei Yisrael, the children of Israel shall take, okay? Since it says that, so therefore it means that not the way we would normally interpret it, namely that the children of Israel shall take, or take in the sense of buy, purchase, okay? But that you have to purchase from whom? From a B'nei Yisrael. You understand? This is how it takes. The Chachamim, of course, disagree, and one point of disagreement is one that we just said a moment ago. They say, look, the word to take, fine. We have it in certain connections, but it doesn't say for every single animal that you're going to use as a sacrifice that, the Torah doesn't use the word ticha. And ticha does imply at times, purchase. The Gemara in Kedushin, for example, a man takes a wife. You understand? How does he take a wife? So, of course, he has to take her. Have to give her something of value and so on in order to be able to. Right. So, at any rate, this is the reasoning that we are now talking about. And specifically now, it centers around the question of not animal sacrifices in general, but specifically the Pora Aduma, the red heifer, the red cow, whatever you want to call it, okay? And because we were dealing with certain laws, remember that on the previous page we learned that, for example, if he put a burden upon the animal, even for a moment, just the rest up, automatically that animal would not be valid, to be used as a parandu. Because the Torah says, Asher lo oleha ol. No yoke has ever gone upon it. And by ol, they mean not just the yoke, but they also mean any other burden, whatever. Okay? So, the paraduma has that particular feature. And it has one other particular feature, and that is that the word chatos, which means literally sin offering, is used in connection with the Parah Aduma. Now, this is a variance with the chatos in general. Because whenever we speak, you know, that we have various sacrifices, we have an ola, you know, a burnt sacrifice, we have a chatos, a sin offering, we have a noshom, a trespass offering, etc., etc., shnomim, you know, peace offerings. So, whenever we have a chatos, there are very specific rules as to what has to be done, what the kohanim have to do, has to, what the brunt has to be sprinkled on the altar, and has to be in a certain position on the altar, and everything else inside, okay? And then eventually the chatos has to be eaten by kohanim, okay? So, that's the rule as far as chatos is concerned, so that therefore, the use of the word chatos in connection with the Parah Aduma, which is not eaten by anyone, because what do they do with the Parah Aduma? They burn it in order to get the ashes and mix it with the water, etc., and then it becomes bei chatos, becomes the waters of purification, okay? But that's where we have the word chatos in connection with the Parah Aduma. And it doesn't follow the same rules as for a chatos in general. So therefore, they're trying to figure out, so what? Why does the Torah use the word chatos in connection with the Parah Aduma? So Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is very simple. He says that since they use the word chatos, and inasmuch as I apply my principle what, not to purchase an animal for a sacrifice from a non-Jew, you know, based on the idea of you have to be true, right? So that therefore, he says, the same thing applies to the Parah Aduma. Fine, very good. So now we come and we start now at the top of the page. Okay? Yeah. Okay. Now, I said actually there were two reasons. First reason that I tell you, you know, that I give you Rabbi Eliezer, you know, is about the matter of from whom. Who is from whom can you buy it, okay, in his opinion. But there's another aspect too. How many red cows do you have where two hairs that are not red will immediately say, you know, make this cow invalid, possible. So obviously, should such a cow be born, then in that particular case, we'll see at the top of the page, it says the mehu yikaren. In other words, you're going to pay a great deal of money in order to purchase this cow.
That's perfect, without the hair.
Right, if it were perfect for Aduma, right.
Right, without the
because of its rarity, that's very, very right. Expensive, okay? And therefore, we go back to the other problem that started with the beginning of this new chapter, in my meaning, namely, we're always afraid, we're concerned that what will a non-Jew, an idolater, do with an animal? The answer is that he will use it for immoral purposes. So, that being the case, why then, according to the sages, would it be still permissible to buy a Parah Aduma from a non-Jew, just as they say sacrifices in general may be bought from non-Jews? So the answer is at the top of the page, Ela b'parah d'domeh yikoren. Alright, this red heifer is very, very expensive. Incidentally, you notice that the word dam in Hebrew means what? It means blood, right?
Dumb.
Right, but damim in the language of the Talmud means money. Okay.
Damim.
Yeah.
Damim.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
To make pizzas.
Well. Right. Right.
Money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So therefore, that, you know, that's what they're saying on the top of the page. In the case of Parah, you know, Parah Aduma, where it's very, very expensive. In order to purchase it, you can be sure that the goy is not going to